Last week, we finished up chapter 16 in Numbers, and we were in the last part of chapter 16. That part of the chapter came right after Korah had led a rebellion that had himself and three from the tribe of Reuben and 250 leaders, and they challenged Moses and Aaron to say, "Everybody's holy. Why have you elevated yourselves?" And Moses has them bring censers, and they burn incense. And as they burn incense in front of the Lord, things don't go so well for them. Korah and his leadership is swallowed up in the earth, and as well as the 250 then are burnt up, and the censers that they had been using, God says they are holy because they were used to worship God, and they are to be hammered into metal to be coating the ark as a reminder to the people of what is going on. And so we saw that the Lord was also ready then to wipe out the congregation, and Moses pleads on their behalf, and that's what leads to Moses being told, get the people back from Korah and the leaders, and that's what led to their being swallowed up. And that is a sign that Moses lays out in front of them that he is really the one that God has chosen. The congregation are scared, they flee, and while that the 250 are being burned up. And so Eleazar, which by the way is Aaron's first son, is given the responsibility of gathering the censers for their being made into a metal covering for the ark. Now, their response to God isn't so good, because we saw that the next day the congregation was grumbling together to Moses, blaming him for the death of what they call Jehovah's people. Clearly, they're talking about the ones that were leading the rebellion. And at the same time, the cloud, the glory of Jehovah, appears again. And God tells Moses to get away from the congregation so I can consume them instantly. Moses tells Aaron, go get your censer, make atonement for the people. And so he uses the censer and he goes out amongst the people and he parks himself between the dead and the living, and the plague is checked. And yet 14,700 people have died, in addition to the ones that were part of Korah's leadership and the 250 that were involved there. It puts quite an emphasis on Aaron's place and responsibility that God has given him to be a priest for the people and to bear the burden of providing, being a part of their atonement when they need it. Which that takes us then today to Numbers chapter 17. And so let's turn there. I'm going to start by reading the first 13 verses. And it says, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and get from them a rod for each father's household, 12 rods from all their leaders according to their father's households. You shall write each name on his rod. Write Aaron's name on the rod of Levi, for there is one rod for the head of each of their father's households. You shall then deposit them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony where I meet with you. It will come about that the rod of the man whom I choose will sprout. Thus I will lessen from upon myself the grumbling of the sons of Israel, who are grumbling against you. Moses therefore spoke to the sons of Israel, and all their leaders gave him a rod apiece, for each leader according to their father's households, 12 rods with the rod of Aaron among their rods. So Moses deposited the rods before the Lord in the tent of the testimony. Now on the next day Moses went to the tent of the testimony, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Moses then brought out all the rods from the presence of the Lord to all the sons of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his rod. But the Lord said to Moses, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put an end to their grumblings against me, so that they will not die." Thus Moses did just as the Lord had commanded him, so he did. Then the sons of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, "Behold, we perish, we're all dying, we're all dying. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of the Lord must die. Are we to perish completely?" And so we'll pick that up, that question, as we move forward. So Jehovah tells Moses to tell Israel, the sons of Israel, to bring one rod for each tribe from the leaders, and Moses is to write their name on the rod. The tribe of Levi, God directs, is to be represented by Aaron, and his name is to be put on the rod. Then we're going to put the rods in the tent of the meeting. We're in the Holy of Holies. We're in the front of the Ark of the Covenant. God says it's where you and I meet, to Moses, and that's where they met, was in the tabernacle in front of the testimony, in front of the Ark of the Covenant. And God tells Moses what to expect. One of those rods is going to represent the man that I choose, and that rod will sprout, and that way I will set aside for me the grumblings of Israel that grumble against you. God's purpose, he makes it very clear here, is that he wants to establish with clarity the one he's picking to carry this priestly function. And instead of the people coming and saying, "Moses or Aaron, why do you set yourselves up so high?" God's going to be able to say, Moses would be able to say, the people should know without even asking that these men were not established by their own advancement, that God himself established them. We saw with the issue with Korah that should have been clear based on God swallowing up those men that were leading the rebellion against Moses. And yet, the people are back the next day grumbling some more. And so now he's going to focus on Aaron and show that Aaron is the one sent. And so that's the purpose of what he's doing. And so Moses did what he was told. He had the leaders provide the rod. There were 12, including Aaron's. And Moses placed the rods before the ark after their names were written on them. And so a day goes by, and the next day, what was found by Moses was that Aaron's rod had sprouted. And it hadn't just sprouted. It had buds and blossoms, and the scriptures make it clear, ripe almonds. Now, I didn't go look to find out, but I know for sure that almonds don't go from non-existence to ripe in a normal day on a normal plant. And so God is making it clear by what happens with Aaron's rod, there is no comparison here. It's not just by accident that his was ready to ripen, and so somehow Aaron just picked the right rod to bring. No, it's very clear that this is the power of God. All of these events through the book of Numbers should have been abundantly clear who's doing what. It's the power of God at work. And yet the people are constantly coming back and grumbling to Moses. So Moses brings out all the rods, and where does he bring them from? There's two answers to this. One's real obvious, the other one's not so obvious, but let's see if we can find those two answers. Where does Moses bring the rods from? Yeah, from the ark in front of the testimony. But in that verse, it says something that I think was intentionally emphasized. Look at verse 9. And what did you say?
It said from before the Lord.
From the presence of the Lord. It is obvious these rods have been left in care of, or in the presence of, the one true living God. And so Moses is now bringing out these rods from the presence of the Lord, not just to see what has happened, but to see what God has done. And so he presents it to the congregation. Everybody looks, and every man takes his rod. And obviously, you can imagine the scene a little bit. It's obvious. 11 rods that nothing happened. Another good word would be just sticks. I mean, that's all they've got to take home. Nothing to be very proud of or pleased with the results if you thought you were somebody. So they're all taking him home, but in comparison to Aaron's rod has flowered and has produced ripe fruit. And God says to Moses, stop, don't let Aaron's not taking his rod home. You're going to put this back before the ark of the before the testimony, before the ark, or probably in the ark, and it's going to be kept for a reason. Why does God want that rod to be kept? We may not answer, we may not give every answer. God may have had some things that we don't see, but there are some things we can see here that God has a very definite purpose in keeping that rod. And what's that purpose?
Sign
so that
Aaron is a priest.
So it will be clear. They'll quit grumbling. And the and is important there in verse 10. So they won't die. God is making it clear that a piece of his purpose is, let's see if we can start saving these people from themselves. So I don't have to kill them just to be a just God. And so God is saying here, I'm trying to provide for them what they need so they'll quit this grumbling. And they grumble not only about me, but they grumble to you. And so Moses did as he was directed. He put Aaron's rod back in the presence of God before the testimony, probably in the Ark of the Covenant. Now, in verse 12, the congregation has a reaction. What's their reaction?
They thought they were going to die.
They all were going to die.
Yeah. We die. Now, this is so typical of the way people react to the things of the world that aren't the way they want them to be. They speak in hyperbole. We're dying. We all die. Well, now, wait a minute. You're still standing here. You're still alive. There's something about what you're saying that's not fully true. But like most hyperbole amongst the grumbling people, there is a kernel of truth. What do they say? Behold, we perish, we're dying, we're all dying. And here's what they say about it. Everyone who comes near the tabernacle of the Lord must die. Are we to perish, all of us, completely? What's their point? Who is designated to do things within the tabernacle?
Aaron
and his children, descendants. And in one sense, they're right. You keep trying to be Aaron, you're going to keep dying. And they say, well, we can't do anything, or we'll get killed. Learning is beginning. If you do the things that were designated for the priest to do, God will not let you live. And we've got a lot of examples of that throughout the history of the Israelites to this point. God didn't put up with it. He gave his directions. He said, here are the people to lead the worship. Here's the way they are to lead the worship. And even when the people themselves that are supposed to be doing it don't follow my directions, what does he do? Aaron lost two sons to fire because they didn't follow the directions. And so they've got a point. Are we all going to perish? Well, no. No, the ones that obey, the ones that worship outside the tabernacle in the way that they should be worshiping, when they bring their sacrifices and work with the priests so the priests can do their functions as they're supposed to, you've got nothing to fear and everything to have hope in. But if you get outside of God's direction for this nation he's establishing and the priesthood he's establishing under Aaron, you're going to be fine. So they're getting the message. Questions or comments about chapter 17?
It's another example of how God performed another miracle. There's nothing that could have happened. Man could not have done anything to create another staff like that and switched it out or anything like that. Can't be explained away.
Can't be explained away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave?
Yeah, I think the fact that Aaron was the chosen one of God to be the high priest is a foretelling of Christ in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Massive correlation between what's going on here and Christ is the high priest in the new covenant.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you could build on that just a little bit. Just as the people wanted to replace Aaron, everybody wanted to be priest. Right? That's kind of what they're saying by their actions up to this point. We also have Christ had many antichrists, didn't he? People who wanted to get in the way of and take the place of Christ. And of course we know that from Ephesians that all of our battles are not against flesh and blood, but there's some heavenly beings involved as well. Good point. Anything else? Well, let's go ahead and look at chapter 18. And in many, many respects, even though it's a little bit on the subtle side, maybe not subtle, but not directly stated that this is its purpose, it's a little bit of an answer to chapter 17, verse 13. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of the Lord must die, or we all to perish completely. How do we fit into this without being in jeopardy of death? And so let's start into chapter 18 and see what instructions God gives here. Let's start with the first seven verses. So the Lord said to Aaron, "You and your sons and your father's household with you shall bear the guilt in connection with the sanctuary. And you and your sons with you shall bear the guilt in connection with your priesthood. Bring with you also your brothers, the tribes of Levi, the tribe of your father, that they may be joined with you and serve you while you and your sons with you are before the tent of the testimony. And they shall thus attend to your obligation and the obligation of all the tent. But they shall not come near to the furnishings of the sanctuary and the altar, or both they and you will die. They shall be joined with you and attend to the obligations of the tent of meeting for all the service of the tent, but an outsider may not come near you. So you shall attend to the obligations of the sanctuary and the obligations of the altar, so that there will no longer be wrath on the sons of Israel. Behold, I myself have taken your fellow Levites from among the sons of Israel. They are a gift to you, dedicated to the Lord, to perform the service for the tent of meeting. But you and your sons with you shall attend to your priesthood, for everything concerning the altar and inside the veil, and you are to perform service. I am giving you the priesthood as a bestowed service, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death." So God's answer, at least in part to what the people are saying here, is, let me tell you what the priests are supposed to do and who they are. And it's interesting that God starts by talking to Aaron about this. Let's go over to Leviticus chapter 10 and read verses 8 through 10. Leviticus 10, 8 through 10. Now in this case, this is instructions that God gives Aaron following the sin of his sons using strange fire and their being consumed. And so let's read Leviticus 10, 8 through 10. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you will not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the clean and the unclean. So this is instructions God gives Aaron after the sin of his sons that led to their death. And you can see the things he's telling him here. Makes you wonder if his sons had been under the influence, so to speak, because that's one of the things that God says to Aaron, don't be coming in to do these duties having consumed strong drink. Don't do that, you will die. And it's a perpetual statute. He's trying to distinguish between the holy and the profane, but my point here really wasn't about those things. These are the two examples in the scriptures where it says God spoke directly to Aaron. And so following this event where Aaron's rod buds, now God is looking at Aaron and he is reinforcing his role as priest by speaking directly to him. And he re-emphasizes what's already been stated several times, that it's to be you and your sons and your father's household, which would be the Levites. But you, Aaron, you're going to be responsible for sins involving the holiness of the tabernacle and violations of the rules. God puts Aaron in a very strong, authoritative space, as well as a space of responsibility. Take it seriously, Aaron. Yes, I'm protecting my tabernacle from misbehaviors, but you have some responsibility here too. You are to see that the people know and follow the rules about who can do these priestly functions. And so they've got some accountability as well. And so they're to proclaim the rules. They're to lead the people in holiness with respect to the tabernacle. Aaron is put in a position now, and has been before, but it's really emphasized strongly now, that there is a holiness that goes with the tabernacle, and the way you behave and the way you talk is to be a leadership role with the people, so they will see it as holy and they will treat the tabernacle with the holiness it deserves. Does that make sense? So Aaron has some real responsibility here. And then in verse 2, he says, also then, bring your brothers, the Levites, to serve you. They're going to work at his direction, and they're going to serve him and his sons. And in verse 2, he says, they're going to serve with you before the tent of the meeting. And then it goes on to verse 3, they're going to be a part of seeing you meet your obligations, to help you in your God-given role with regard to the tent of the meeting. But they are not to come near the holy furniture or the altar, or both they and you will die. Aaron, bring your Levite brothers. They're going to serve you. But if they get involved where they don't belong, dealing with the holy furniture, they're going to die, along with you. So Aaron's got some real responsibility here. And then he goes on in verse 4 to say that they're going to be joined and attend to these obligations, but an outsider, in addition, cannot get involved with this. So what's an outsider?
Not a Levite.
Not a Levite. Not just not a Jew, but not a Levite. So even with regard to the Levitical role that's broad, that Aaron is leading, the non-Levites are not invited to come and help and be a part of that. In verse 5, he says then, you shall attend to the obligations of the sanctuary. What are the obligations of the sanctuary? What's he talking about here? You're attend to the obligations of the sanctuary. Well, that list could be, if we made it very specific, a long one, but there, the obligations of the sanctuary are multiple, and I've got a place we're going to stop and take a look at some of that. And so let me just hold that for a little bit, but there are going to be sacrifices involved. There are going to be incense to burn. There's going to be numerous things that are a part of their obligations in the sanctuary. And so they're going to take care of that. And lost my place in my notes. There's a purpose in verse 5. What is his purpose in telling Aaron, you take care of the obligations, you get them done? And it's stated right there in verse 5. What's his purpose? What's God's purpose in giving that direction to Aaron?
It sounds like he's not going to give him any more wrath or more all.
Well, in verse 5, this is just what it says. So there will no longer be wrath on the sons of Israel, implied, for they're getting involved in the services of the sanctuary. In other words, Aaron, you get it done, so they're not out there looking going, hey, it's not getting done. You know, that's kind of a thing that happens in the world, right? When there's something that really needs to be done and everybody can see it, but the people that should be doing it aren't doing it, you start trying to figure out, well, how are we going to get this done? No, Aaron, you take the responsibility for it. You carry it out well, and these people won't have this opportunity to gain my wrath because you will have already done the things that needed to be done. In verse 6, it starts with the word behold in the New American Standard. It means see, take note. This is important. Hear this. I myself, God says, this is God himself speaking, have taken the Levites from the tribe of Israel to be a gift to you. And they also, though, are dedicated to the Lord. In other words, when they're working for you, they're not your people. They're not dedicated to you. When they work for you, they're working for me. God said, I've set them apart for this. They're dedicated for me. They're dedicated to Jehovah. And they're there to perform service for the tent of meeting as you direct. But for you and your sons, in verse 7, attend to the priesthood for everything concerning the altar and inside the veil, you're to perform service. I'm giving you the priesthood as a bestowed service, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death. And so anyone who's not in Aaron's family, including the Levites, is an outsider for those things that would happen within the Holy of Holies, before the altar and inside the veil. So it's the holy place and the Holy of Holies. And so Aaron's got that job, but how did he get it? Yeah, God said, New American Standard words, I bestowed this on you. It's not because of something else. It's because I said to you, you've got the job. Now, Aaron may have had lots of qualities that God had given him to do the job well, but it isn't because you're super qualified necessarily, Aaron. It's because I picked you for that. Okay. So let's talk about this priestly service. And one of the things that we know that it's going to include is sacrifices and offerings. There's a lot of times that God has already proclaimed, you need to give a sacrifice for this and for that. If you're going to take a vow, do this sacrifice. You've got sin, give a sin sacrifice. And so there are sacrifices listed throughout our study so far and will be further expanded upon as we look at the rest of the Old Testament in many cases. But there are also some other duties that we ought to remind ourselves of. Go to Exodus chapter 29. And I'm going to start with verse 38 and read through 42. I must not be in 29. I am not. Turn another page. 29, beginning in verse 38. So this is during a part of God's instruction to Moses on the mountain about how we're going to do business. And part of it is this, beginning in verse 38. This is what you shall offer on the altar. 2 1-year-old lambs each day continuously. The one lamb you shall offer in the morning, and the other lamb you shall offer at twilight. And there shall be 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/4 of a hin of beaten oil, and 1/4 of a hin of wine for a drink offering with one lamb. The other lamb you shall offer at twilight, and shall offer it with the same grain offering and with the same drink offering as in the morning, for a soothing aroma, an offering by fire to the Lord. It shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations. At the doorway of the tent of meeting before the Lord, well, I will meet with you and speak with you there. So in addition to all the individual offerings, just because the tent is established, it's a center of worship, it's just a daily part of what they do, to include the offering of the lambs. And then go over to Exodus 30. We're going to look at verses 1 through 10. God is giving instructions here about the, in reference to the altar of incense. Remember, there's two altars in the holy place. One's the brazen altar, the big altar for the sacrifices. But here we're going to get instructions about how Aaron is to handle the altar of incense, or the golden altar. Moreover, you shall make an altar as a place for burning incense. You shall make it of acacia wood. Its length shall be a cubit, its width a cubit, shall be square, and its height shall be 2 cubits. Got offline. Its horn shall be of 1 piece with it. You shall overlay it with pure gold, its top and its sides and all around and its horns, and you shall make a gold molding all around for it. You shall make 2 gold rings for under its molding, and you shall make them on its 2 side walls, on opposite sides, and they shall be holders for the poles with which to carry it. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. You shall put this altar in front of the veil that is near the Ark of the Testimony, in front of the mercy seat, so that it is over the Ark of the Testimony where I will meet with you. Aaron shall burn fragrant incense on it. He shall burn it every morning when he trims the lamps. When Aaron trims the lamps at twilight, he shall burn incense. There shall be a perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall not offer any strange incense on this altar, or burnt offering or meal offering, and you not shall not pour out a drink offering on it. Aaron shall make atonement on its horns once a year. He shall make atonement on it with the blood of the sin offering of atonement once a year throughout your generations. It is most holy to the Lord. So just surrounding this altar of incense, Aaron and company has a lot of responsibility. We're going to burn incense on it twice a day. And it's going to be in there. Oh, remember the golden lampstand? He's going to do this at the same time he trims the wicks on the golden lampstand, so that it will work correctly and right and keep things lit as intended by God. Now, there are things that he's prohibited from doing on this altar of incense, right? It's not an altar for sacrifice of animals. You don't make grain offerings on it. You don't make drink offerings on it. Oh, but once a year, there's an atonement that's made by taking blood that is given from the offering on the brazen altar and placed on the horns of the altar. And so this is just some of the kinds of things that are continuously ongoing for the priests to be a part of and their duties. Comments, thoughts? One of the things we didn't talk about in priestly duties, of course, has also been given in the earlier part of the book of Numbers. Remember all the duties about moving? It's only Aaron and the priests that can pack up these holy things. Once they're covered and packed up, then other parts of the tribe of Levi do most of the moving. And then when they get to the other end, Aaron and the priests do the unpacking of the holy furniture. What else would you like to had here.
How long do they stay in each area? I mean, they have a lot to do just to get
there. Well, I'm going to give you an answer that we find right in what we've studied. Okay. When the presence of God in the form of the cloud would come and descend on the tabernacle, or fire by night, they stayed. When they saw the presence of God come up and raise off of that, then they started packing up to go. Where did they go? Wherever the cloud or the fire went. And when did they unpack? When God stopped, they stopped. And so, yes, it was a job to move. Got a lot of help. Got a lot of people, meaning Levites in this case. And so there, that's really the best answer I can give you. How long did it take them to pack it up? I don't know. Unpacking? I don't know. I would guess the moving was pretty was concurrent. I would say when they got ready to move, I believe this is even in the scripture, but I have to go find it to be sure, the tabernacle led. It would have been God, the tabernacle crew, and then, no, I've got that wrong. Well, directions are given about which tribes take out first. And I forgot about that. That's early in Numbers. 2, 3, 4. I'm not sure now. I'd have to do some looking to find that. But God gives direction on where each of the tribes are going to be, and when they make their moves, which one starts and which one follows and where they go. I don't remember the exact placement of the tabernacle itself. Sorry, poor answer, but I'm not going to be able to look it up and get it back in my head real quickly for this. Any other questions, comments? All right, well, let's look at Numbers 18. And we're going to start with verse 8 and read through 24. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron, "Now behold, I myself have given you charge of my offerings, even all the holy gifts of the sons of Israel. I have given them to you as a portion and to your sons as a perpetual allotment. This shall be yours from the most holy gifts, reserved from the fire. Every offering of theirs, even every grain offering and every sin offering and every guilt offering which they shall render to me, shall be most holy for you and your sons. As for the most holy gifts, you shall eat it. Every male shall eat it. It is holy to you. This is also yours, the offering of their gift. Even all the wave offerings of the sons of Israel, I have given them to you and to your sons and to your daughters with you as a perpetual allotment. Every one of your household who is clean may eat it. All the best of the fresh oil, and all the best of the fresh wine, and of the grain, and of the first fruits of those which they give to the Lord, I give them to you. The first ripe fruits of all that is in their land, which they bring to the Lord, shall be yours. Every one of your household who is clean may eat. Every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. Every first issue of the womb of all flesh, whether man or animal, which they offer to the Lord, shall be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man you shall surely redeem, and the firstborn of unclean animals you shall redeem. As to their redemption price from a month old, you shall redeem them by your valuation, 5 shekels in silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. But the firstborn of an ox, or the firstborn of sheep, or the firstborn of a goat, you shall not redeem. They're holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar, and shall offer up their fat in smoke as an offering by fire, for a soothing aroma to the Lord. Their meat shall be yours. It shall be yours like the breast of the wave offering, and like the right thigh. All of the offerings of the Lord, all the offerings of the holy gifts, which the sons of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and to your sons and to your daughters with you as a perpetual allotment. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord to you and to your descendants with you. Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in the land, nor own any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel. to the sons of Levi, "Behold, I've given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance, in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. The sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting, or they will bear sin and die. Only the Levites shall perform the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and among the sons of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said concerning them, they shall have no inheritance amongst the sons of Israel." All right, so the Lord Jehovah talks again to Aaron and says, "Look, pay attention. I myself give you charge over my offerings. Even the holy gifts of Israel, it's a portion to you and your sons perpetually." And so God begins to explain how these offerings are to be taken into the Levites and the sons of Aaron. And so there's a number of things he says. Items of animal sacrifice, the part that's not burned, it's most holy to you and to your sons. And so that's to be food for the males among you. The non-animal offerings, he says in verses 11 through 13, belong to you, your sons and your daughters, and it's going to be perpetual. And so everybody that's clean in the household may eat of it. What do we mean by clean? No sin. There could be more.
No touching dead things.
If you've touched a dead thing, now you're unclean for a week. There's a process to go through that. Certain illnesses that you may have, or you may touch people that have it. There are things that can make you ceremonially unclean. And so those things have to be dealt with. But as long as they were dealt with, they can eat it. And it includes the best of the oil, the wine, and the first fruits that are brought. And God goes on in verse 14 to say, everything that's devoted in Israel, those things that are set apart for me are yours, including the firstborn of the animals and men. Now he does say if it's the male men, surely those will be redeemed. And if it's unclean animals, they will be redeemed. So what does that mean, they're going to be redeemed? Now God gives them the price here. It's going to be 5 shekels. But what is this? How are they redeemed?
Instead of taking them in, you're taking the money.
Right. Remember back when they were coming out of Egypt?
Yeah.
God said, "Oh, by the way, I spared all the firstborn, right? So they're mine."
Yeah.
And he established the idea of redemption. Certain animals and all people should be redeemed. And it was done with a price. And so instead of getting the man child, the male child that's born, you're going to get a redemption price, and it's going to be 5 shekels, which done this before, but the 5 shekels, there's two ways to talk about it. We could say, well, it's this much physical silver. It was done in silver. And to put some numbers on it, it's about 10 to 15 grams, depending on what you can depend on for conversion rates. Is that a lot of money? Well, if you're a Jew, it's a lot of money. In many periods of time, and we don't know here how the Jews got income and to what rate. But if we were in the time of Christ, 5 shekels was a month's wages. So it wasn't a cheap redemption price. The firstborn of the ox, the sheep, and the goat, you don't redeem them. Why? They're holy to God, so their blood needs to go on the fire along with the fat as smoke. But the meat, God says, that's yours. And it's like the breast of the wave offering or the right thigh. You remember what he's talking about there? What's that?
Birds.
No.
Oh, okay.
It's like the breast or the right thigh. Go to Exodus chapter 29. This is when God is having the priests sanctified and set apart for their priestly role. And this is part of what God had them do. Exodus 29, we're going to go look at verses 26 through 28. So here we are, Aaron and his offspring are there to be ordained into the priesthood. And this is a part of what you do with them. It's not by any means the whole thing. Then you shall take the breast of Aaron's ram of ordination and wave it as a wave offering before the Lord, and it shall be your portion. You shall consecrate the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering, which was waved and which was offered from the ram of ordination, from the one which was for Aaron and the one which for his sons. And it shall be for Aaron and his sons as their portion forever for the sons of Israel. It's a heave offering. And it shall be a heave offering from the sons of Israel for the sacrifices of their peace offerings, even their heave offerings to the Lord. And it talks then in verses 31 and following how this meat is going to be prepared, and it has to be consumed before the next morning by Aaron and his offspring. So this is a portion that God says, okay, not only when we did this consecration sacrifice, but now as we go forward, you get to take this meat in the same fashion. And it is holy, and so your males can eat it, and it's to be done perpetually in that way. And then all the offerings and the holy gifts of Israel to the Lord I give to you, your sons and your daughters, as a perpetual allotment. It's an everlasting covenant of salt. What is that covenant of salt saying is about? And behind it, and even salt sometimes might be used in a covenant setting, but salt was considered to be something that did not spoil or go away. So what that really means is it's an everlasting covenant. I skipped by, and I'm not sure why I did it. I must have looked past something in my notes, that the grain offerings and all of that, well, that's for the whole household, including the daughters. They're specifically mentioned, so they're not left out of all of this. And so this is going to go on in perpetuation. This salt offering is kind of an idiom of the day. Then in verse 20, God told Aaron, you have no portion or inheritance in their land. That's an interesting way he says that. We're going into this promised land, but you don't get a piece. Now there's some things they will get, but they don't get an inheritance like the rest of them. And he calls it their land. He's separating off the Levites, and of course Aaron and company, from the other tribes, saying you're different. It's their land. It's not your land. It's their land. But what does God say is their inheritance and their portion? He is. I am your inheritance and portion. God says, you've got me in a way they don't get me. You've got me as you get to be in contact with me. You get to be the go-between with me. You get to serve me. You get to worship me in a greater detail than they will. You're going to be doing the actual works that go along, the functions of making these sacrifices and the worship that goes up to God. So, question to you that I don't know how they would have answered it, but who got the greater inheritance? Aaron and the Levites, absolutely. The Levites, my gift, the Levites get my gift. Let me look at verse 21. I don't like the way I said it in my notes. I don't want to say it that way, so let's go down to verse 21 and we'll say it this way. To the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. And so he is saying this tithe that will be brought in, that's for the tribe of Levi, and it's in return for their service. It's what they get for not being out growing crops for themselves, but serving me. Of course, the sons of Israel are not to come near the tabernacle again where they will bear sin and die. Only the Levites serve the tent, they will bear their iniquity. And this is a perpetual law. So they get those things. Okay. It's 5 till. Let me borrow from this just a little bit. Well, I really want to save that for our discussion coming up on the gifts that they get, what they have to do as well. So I guess I've hit the stopping point I'm going to have to accept. It's not the one I expected, so I don't have a tie-together ending planned here. But certainly we see the value in following God and His direction for us. We got a great example of how the body doesn't work well when we saw the people who wanted to be priests that weren't designated priests, and when they said, we want to be, they were like the part of the body saying, because I'm not an eye, I need to be an eye so I can be valuable. Why do you think you as an eye are so valuable? Well, I didn't make myself an eye. And so here we're getting very clear direction for Aaron and the tribe of Levi. And you know, we need to take good direction from God as He gives us direction in how to live as Christians. It's real easy for pride to slip in. It's real easy for us to make our self-worth based out of how visible we are in our services or what we think is important or who we think gets the best jobs or maybe the worst jobs. And it's just, it's not how it works. God's opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And we need God's grace. We kid ourselves when we think we're special. We kid ourselves when we think that we are really good people on our own. It isn't that way, and we know it. So to me, when I read this, this is, hey, wherever God puts you, that's where you are. Don't worry about it. And just do what God has directed you to do. Questions or comments you would like to bring this morning? Okay, well, next time we are going to pick it up with verse 25. We will see you then.